Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on 101 business principles when we come back. Hey, are you concerned about your privacy? Well, how much does your government know about you, and how much do you want government to know about you? Well, your government only knows as much about you as you tell them about yourself. And that's because everything the government, industry, or business knows about you is because you told them. Now, the Fourth Amendment protects you in your person, houses, papers, and effects, but it does not protect you from yourself. Now, can we have privacy in the computer age? And the answer is yes, we can. And that's because information is gathered and stored in a very reasoned and logical manner for later retrieval and use. It's knowing how much information is gathered, what information is being stored, and what information you want to keep personal and private that actually puts you in the driver's seat in your quest for privacy. So always keep in mind that no one knows anything about you that you have not revealed by your own hand or by your own mouth. Now, if you'd like to learn more about privacy and privacy issues, then call us here at the law school and ask for our free general law CD package. That's a 4-hour program. It's entertaining, it's informative, it's educational. Best of all, it's free. Why don't you just call the school at area code 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Just call us and ask for it. If you're online, you can go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Now, once more, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about business principles. Principles of business that Henry Ford, Bill Gates, Warren Buffett, all the big names, Donald Trump, use. They may not use all 101 of these because some of them come from the Bible, but every one of these business principles I have gathered, I have stored, I have gleaned from other businessmen throughout my life. And every time I would find some new trick, some new technique being used by a businessman, I would ask him about it. Why do you do that, Mr. Rocha? Why do you follow that business principle or that practice, Mr. Harvey? And then they would tell me, well, because that's what produces happy, satisfied customers. And after all, the customer is always right. And there was an old adage that said the customer is always right. And why do we use that adage, the customer is always right? Because if you contradict your customer, if you try to give your customer something he doesn't want, then your customer says, you know, I think I'll go someplace else and buy what it is that I want to buy. You know, if your customer comes into the Ford dealership, he must be thinking about a Ford. And when he comes in, you try to sell him a Studebaker, and the guy's going to get kind of huffy on you. He's going to say, well, if I wanted a Studebaker, you know I'd have gone into the Studebaker dealer. So we want to please the customer. It's kind of a fundamental. You don't have to be real smart to figure that out. You don't have to go to college or be a Rhodes Scholar. So these business principles over a long period of time, like legal principles, have developed over thousands of years. They work, and the people who use them make a lot of money at it. And since the objective of business is to make money, and maybe even a lot of money, then it makes sense to use the business principles that produce the success that you desire. So last time, we finished number 26. If you can't hang on to it, you don't need to make it. Number 27, if you always eat the best first, then you'll always have the best. If you always eat the best first, you'll always have the best. I learned that from an old farmer named John Newhart. And one night we were having dinner after milking, and I was brand new on the job, and this is my first day on the job, and I didn't know this fellow Newhart very well, so we sat down to eat and had a good dinner, and we had meat and potatoes, and we had vegetables, and we had, gravy and so on, bread and butter, and so, you know, everybody sat down, and we're all starting to eat, and Mr. Newhart started with strawberry shortcake. Now, the rest of us are eating meat and potatoes, and Mr. Newhart is eating strawberry shortcake. I thought that was a little strange, and as we were finishing dinner, Mr. Newhart then reached over, and he got the meat and the potatoes, and he ate meat and potatoes, and when he got through eating meat and potatoes, why, then he finally ended up by eating the broccoli or the vegetable last. Now, I think I was about 15 years old, and I watched that event, and I couldn't contain myself, so I said, "Mr. Newhart, I noticed that when you ate dinner tonight that you ate your dessert first and you ate your broccoli last, and I've never seen that done before. Could you tell me why you do that?" And he said, "Well, I always eat the best first, and that way I always have the best." And he gave me a little counsel. He said, when you're going through life, he was an old man in his 70s, an old farmer, and I'm just a young kid, 15. He says, "Now, when you're going through your life, son, you always remember that you eat the best first, and you will always have the best." And I mulled that one over a little bit, because I noticed that Mr. Newhart, any time that he undertook some project, he always did the best first. And he always had the best. Then I applied it to business, and I said, "Well, then if I have three deals, I should take the best deal first, then the next best deal second, and the third best deal third, and take them in that order. And if I do that, I'll always have the best." He was right. Now, if you never do business with a thief, you'll never be stolen from. If you never do business with a thief, you'll never be stolen from. Now, our problem in life is that we can't tell the thieves from the honest people. So, in class, I always ask my students in business, I say, "How many of you do business with the mafia? How many of you borrow money from a loan shark?" And everybody looks at you like, "You must be suffering from the terminal stupids, Gordon," and nobody raises their hands, and even if they did, they wouldn't admit it. And then I ask the question, "How many of you people do business with government or government agents and government agencies?" And again, people will look at you like, "Well, you must be suffering from the terminal stupids," as everybody raises their hands. And I said, "How many of you people have ever been shortchanged, lied to, cheated, or robbed by a loan shark or a mafia or a Cosa Nostra agent?" Everybody looks at you and they shake their heads, "Well, never have." Then I ask the final question and I say, "How many of you are 100% satisfied with all of your business dealings with government, government agents, and government agencies? And how many of you have never been cheated, lied to, or stolen from by your government?" And everybody looks at you and they raise their hands and they say, "Well, yeah, we've all been lied to and stolen from and cheated by government." And then I remind them, if you never do business with a thief, you'll never be stolen from. Doing business with government is doing business with a thief. Now, all of you know that. You just never thought of it. Number 29, there's no substitute for diligence and hard work. Business doesn't stop at 5 o'clock. employees do, but business doesn't. And so a businessman will be working far into the night after the employees have all gone home and are watching television and drinking beer. And that's why the employees are employees. Diligence and hard work go together. You not only have to be diligent to make sure that all of the work is done at the end of the day, but that the work is done for your customers, because after all, the customer is always right, and we have to satisfy the customer because he has 10 friends. And dropping the ball and quitting at 5 o'clock is not diligence. And failing to perform is not hard work. Number 30, in business, you get what you pay for. Oftentimes, people buy cheap John shoddy goods. I learned long ago that when you go to buy a tool, buy the best that money can buy. We're going to be using this tool for a long time, so I buy Milwaukee tools. A lot of people buy the cheap John stuff. I don't. I buy the expensive. I buy the Craftsman. I buy the good stuff. And over the long haul, I have tools here, and I have inherited tools that go back 100 years. A wooden level that goes back 100 years. I still have it. Passed down from generation to generation. It was a good tool in 1900, and it's just as good a tool in 2007. But I've got tools that I bought myself years and years ago, and they didn't last very long. Now, once you've spent your money on the tool that lasts 100 years, that's a cheap investment. When you spend your money on a tool that lasts a year, and then you buy another one, and it lasts a year, and you buy another one, you know, by the time you've bought 5 or 6 of those tools, you could have bought 2 or 3 good tools. So always keep in mind that in business, you get what you pay for. Number 31 is a satisfied customer is the best value for your advertising dollar. Now, I've advertised on radio and television and in newspapers. I've printed catalogs and put out mailings, and I've spent, God knows how much money I've spent on advertising. But it's many hundreds of thousands of dollars, maybe even a million or two. And I never discovered a better advertising vehicle than a satisfied customer and word of mouth. Never yet have I discovered a better one. Because a happy, satisfied customer is singing your praises like Alameda Chevrolet for years to come. But a dissatisfied customer is also singing your praises for years to come. And he's telling everybody, I wouldn't buy from that guy if he was the last guy in the world. So advertising is like a sharp, two-edged sword, especially at the customer level. So if you want to know how to spend your advertising dollar, you can't spend it better than on a satisfied customer. So whatever it takes, whatever you have to spend to satisfy your customer, do it. Now, a business without a plan is like a ship without a rudder. A business without a plan is like a ship without a rudder. It can't go anywhere. It reminds me of the World War II ship, the Bismarck, and the Germans had this real neat pocket battleship, and it was out in the Atlantic Ocean, and it was really a neat boat, and it was out there sinking ships right and left, and they're just having a great time. And then the English, they went out there, and just by a lucky hit, I guess it was, they hit the rudder on the ship, and here was a ship, you know. It was in good condition in all regards and all respects except for the rudder. They didn't have a rudder. And because they didn't have a rudder, they couldn't steer the ship. And because they couldn't steer the ship, then it became easy prey for the British who came over there and finally sunk it. Business works the same way. If you don't have an idea as to where you're going over the next 5, 10, 15, or 20 years, you can rest assured that your company isn't going to go there either. Companies like J.C. Penney, Montgomery Ward, Sears Roebuck, Cisco Systems, the companies you know today that are the trendsetters in their particular environments, are companies that have a vision. Those are companies that Bill Gates, for instance, with Microsoft, has a vision for the future. He has an idea as to what he wants Microsoft to be in 5, 10, 15, or 20 years. He had that vision 5, 10, 15, 20 years ago, and that's why Microsoft is where it is today, and that's why Walmart is where it is today. And little companies with people who only have in their minds Friday and payday and a pack of beer and television don't last long, they don't go anywhere, and they're not long remembered. So tuck it away in your heart that a business without a plan is like a ship without a rudder. Now, credit business, number 33, is bad business. Credit business is bad business. It isn't illegal business. I offer credit, and from time to time I do credit transactions. But I also follow another business plan or another business principle that says, never risk more than you can afford to lose. Now, when you get paid cash, that's COD, you never lose any money on your business transactions. The only time you lose money is when you offer credit, and sometimes your credit customers don't pay you. Cash customers always pay you. Credit customers most of the time pay you. Credit customers some of the time don't pay you. And the only purpose for business is profit. Business does not exist for any other purpose. And the most important part of business is getting paid. Now just put those three together. If the most important part of business is getting paid, then it's important then that we get paid. And when you don't get paid, you get stiffed. So when it costs you a dollar to buy the product, and you sell it for two, and you don't get paid, you have to make one other sale to break even. Which means you had to make two sales. You had to work twice as hard to stand still. That's not good business. It is business, but it's not good business. So never offer more credit than you can afford to lose. Never risk more than you can afford to lose. And if you can afford to lose it, then go ahead and offer it. I do. From time to time, someone needs credit, and so I offer them credit. But the only time I lose money is when I have a credit account. Now, the single most important thing in business is getting paid. That's number 34. If you don't get paid, then you have missed the single most important part of the business transaction. Business is not here to employ people. Business is not here to produce things. Business is not here to distribute those things far and wide to make people's lives easier, better, or more rewarding and fulfilling. And any business that is dedicated to any of those collateral issues will not be in business long. So the most important thing in business is getting paid. And getting paid is the purpose for business because profit is the purpose for business. Now, if your business is in business for profit and you make your profit and you get paid, some collateral benefits will flow from that business. It will employ people. So it will provide employment. It will distribute goods far and wide, and it will make people's lives better. That's a collateral fallout or benefit that comes from good business. But it's not the purpose for business. Number 35, if you need a license to do your business is a criminal activity. Now, you know, when you tell people that, they kind of look at you like, huh? Why, no. I have a business license to operate my restaurant, but we're not a criminal activity. Boys and girls, the very definition of the word license is a criminal activity. Go look it up. You see, a license is permission to do something that's otherwise illegal and lawful, a tort or a trespass. So when you got your license, what tort or trespass did you intend to commit for which you needed a license to avoid the penalty? Now, it is true that people have licenses, you know. They have marriage licenses and driver's licenses, and they have business licenses, and they have professional licenses. And every one of those activities is a criminal activity. Every one of those activities violates some aspect of the law of God, the law of Moses. Now, I know that's shocking, and most people, you know, they gasp, you know, when they're in class, and they say, well, how can that be? Well, it's very simple. See, when you get a marriage license, you intended to marry outside your race. That violates the Mosaic law. So the only purpose for a marriage license is so that you can marry outside of your race. And so I always ask people, well, how many of you married outside of your race? And they'll look at you like, well, I didn't. Here in America, only 1% of the population will marry someone outside of their race. It's public policy. Government promotes interracial marriage. But people just naturally don't do that. It is true that various species of deer can interbreed with one another, but they just naturally don't do that. White-tailed deer breed with white-tailed deer. They don't breed with other species of deer. A black bear could breed with a grizzly bear. A grizzly bear could breed with a polar bear, but they don't. We can take them and we can interbreed them, but that's an intervention. Naturally, it isn't done. Naturally, just left to themselves, they won't do that. And the same thing is true here. If you need a license to do your business, then your business is unnatural. Government licenses businesses, and they license business to commit some illegal act, some act that will violate the law of Moses. The Jimmy Dean Pure Pork Sausage Company is a licensed enterprise to manufacture and sell pork, which is a violation of Leviticus 11, Deuteronomy 14. Now somebody's going to say, well, Walmart is licensed. Of course they're licensed, because they do business in Federal Reserve notes, which are unjust weights and balances. And they have to be licensed because they want to violate the law of God. People who do business in gold and silver coin and do private business outside of commerce don't need licenses. So tuck it away in your heart. If you need a business license, it's a criminal activity. Are you really sure that you want to involve yourself in some criminal activity? Now, there's nothing wrong with making a good profit. I learned that from old Neil Barnes. I was listening to him. He was the John Deere dealer in Fernbridge, California. And one day he said, there's nothing wrong with making a good profit. And I wondered about that. How much profit is a good profit? Well, whatever the market will bear. I can remember that I paid $5,000 back in 1980 or 81, 82. I guess it was 82. $5,000 for an Apple computer. It was a marvelous machine. And I don't know how much the profit margin was for the Apple computer, but back in 1980, compared with 2000, prices doubled. Prices doubled. So if we go back to 1980 or 82, when I bought my Apple computer and it was $5,000, the boy went out the other day and he bought a computer. It was under $1,000 and it does about 10 times more than the computer did back. I remember it had a daisy wheel. I never did run it. I just hired a man to run it, and it did 135 words a minute. And we thought, wow. That machine can type 135 words a minute. Well, we were writing legal briefs just right and left. Wonderful machine. $5,000. It was well worth the $5,000 that we spent. Now, I'm sure that most people couldn't afford a $5,000 computer back in 1980. Today, most people can afford a $500 or $1,000 computer. And if you stop and think about it, the $500 or $1,000 today is 20% less. I mean, it's only 20% of what we paid back then. It's 80% less. And it does 10 times more. So if you add all that together, you know, it's really a great value today. And I'm sure that the people making computers today are making a profit at it. So if they're making a profit off of a $1,000 computer today, giving me 10 times more value for my money at 80% less money, and they're still making a profit, they must have been making a god-awful profit back in 1980. But it didn't make any difference to me whether they produced the computer for $100 and sold it to me for $5,000. Now, some people would say, my God, that's an unconscionable profit. Why is it unconscionable? Remember, all business is conducted between unequals, and that guy's got the computer, and I need it. So I took a look at it and said, well, if I spend $5,000 on that computer, and I use that computer, I can make $25,000 or $50,000 or $100,000 with it. So if I can take that computer for $5,000 and use that computer and make $100,000 with it, then the $5,000 that I spent on it's insignificant. What difference does it make how much profit he made? Now somebody's going to say, well, you only paid $5,000 for that computer, and you sold the profits, or you sold the product that came from it for $100,000. That's unconscionable. Why is it unconscionable? You needed my service, or you wouldn't have bought it. My service must have been priced right, or you would have gone somewhere else. So I mulled that over and I said, the people who say that that profit is unconscionable are communists. They're not businessmen. And that's why communists stand in line to share the shortage. They always have, and they always will. Businessmen produce an abundance. They don't stand in line, and they have more than they can use. You know, the choice is yours. You can practice communism and stand in line and share the shortage, or you can practice business. And you don't have to stand in line, and you'll have a great surplus. Now, a business, like a ship, has room for only one captain. Business does not run by committee. Government is a business. And government is a business that runs by committee. And so when you go to Congress, they've got all these committees. Now, there isn't anything that Congress, there isn't anything that government cannot do half as well for twice as much. And government is run by committee. Now, maybe government ought to run by committee, because when you give somebody too much power, and that's what a businessman is, he's just a dictator. And it runs counter to the interests of the employees. The employees want to run the business by committee through the union. And those businesses don't run well, as is evidenced by Studebaker, Hudson, and Packard. Now, there were some survivors in the auto industry. And I'm an old-timey union man, but I want to tell you, business does not run by committee if it's going to be successful and profitable over the long term. Now, the Russian model of the Russian government, or the Soviet experience, which collapsed in 1989, 1991, along in there, they ran their government by committee. And all of these governments end. All governments end. They have a final, finite conclusion. And businesses that run by committee all have an end, like Studebaker, Packard, and Hudson. Ford and General Motors will go the way of Studebaker, Packard, and Hudson. It's just a matter of time. Business runs by a dictator, because that dictator makes the decisions like a general on the battlefield. This is the way we're going to do this. He's either right or he's wrong. If he's wrong, he loses the battle. That's Napoleon at Waterloo. But on the other hand, you know, there are winning generals, like General Eisenhower at Normandy. And you can't run a war by committee, and you can't run a business by committee either. So always tuck it away in your heart that business is not a committee-type operation. Business is a dictatorial operation in which one man, one woman, one person ultimately makes the decision. Like old Harry Truman once observed, he said, "The buck stops here." And if you can't stand the heat, get out of the kitchen. A couple of wise old sayings. Hey, I got to give you a mid-course reminder that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet daily. For more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from a scriptural perspective. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives, and it can be accessed through the website as well. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do that 7 days a week. The law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, just call the law school at 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or of this local radio station. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please visit our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we are talking about 101 business principles. I have gleaned these principles from other businessmen for many, many years. I have watched and observed businessmen and business boys for many, many years. I have watched businesses come and businesses go, some thrive, some die. And I wanted to know why. Why is it that businesses fail? Why is it that some businesses succeed? Some succeed like Microsoft on a wild scale, like Microsoft and Walmart. And some are successful and they survive for a while, like Kmart. But they're closing stores all the time. Walmart is opening stores all the time and Kmart is closing stores all the time. I gotta ask, well, what was it that Kmart was doing in the past that they're not doing today? What is it that Walmart is doing today that Kmart is not doing today? I mean, I don't have any great preference as to whether I buy a battery charger at Kmart or Walmart until I actually go into the Kmart store and then I go into the Walmart store and there's a difference there. And I noticed the difference right away. And I said to myself, now, I'm not a great businessman. I'm not a Warren Buffett. I'm not a Donald Trump. But just as a customer walking into the Walmart store, I noticed right away that the service was better. They seemed to like me better at Walmart than at Kmart. I could go into a Walmart store and get out faster than I could out of a Kmart store. And I could get served when I went into the Walmart store by asking one of the many people wearing those blue shirts, and has a little name badge on there. They're identifiable. The employees in the Walmart store are all identifiable. And when I see one of them, hey, you, hey, I need to know, where do I go get this? And they can direct me. Every time, they can just direct me. Sometimes they even walk me back to where I want to go. They take me. I go into a Kmart store and they don't do any of the above. So from my personal experience in a Walmart store and in a Kmart store, I prefer Walmart because of the better service. Not because they got better products. I don't know. Chinese products are Chinese products. I don't think any of it's made in America. It all comes from China. So whether I buy a Chinese product from Kmart or a Chinese product from Walmart's kind of academic, but the Walmart store has a better business model. Now, I just carried that a step further and I said, you know, if I was the CEO of Kmart, you know what I would do coming out of the chute? I would copy everything that I see going on in the Walmart store so that I was at least equal to the Walmart store, so that when you came into a Kmart store, you got the same service and you got the same products, you got the same prices. I mean, you can't tell me that the Kmart store can't buy in truckload quantities. Furthermore, the idea that Walmart always sells for less is poppycock. Walmart sells for as much as they can get. Their slogan that we always sell for less is a good slogan. And maybe Kmart needs to develop a slogan to compete with it. But the Walmart and the Kmart prices are an illusion. Just wanted to point that out. Now, in business, there's no substitute for experience. That's number 38. Now, you can start off in business, and if you don't have any experience, you're not very likely to succeed. You know, if you're a mechanic and you want to open a garage, I mean, you know, that's fine, but you better have some mechanical experience. Now, I don't think I'm going to make it as a mechanic. I mean, I got six thumbs on both hands, and it didn't hold a wrench very well. And so, and then my knowledge isn't very good either, you know. I can't figure out what it is that causes what to do that. And so, mechanicking, it just isn't my thing in life. And I've come to that conclusion. I've done quite a bit of it, and I don't like it, and I don't care for it, and I do it because I have to, but I don't really like it. I don't even like changing a tire. You know, I can do it, but I don't really, really relish that. So in business, there's no substitute for experience. You need to know what you're doing. And so, you know, if you've been working as a mechanic for somebody for a while and you want to go out on your own and start up your own business, then you apply these business principles with your knowledge and skill, and you should be a success as a mechanic. Number 39, a good business is based on performance, not trust. Now, a little earlier I pointed out to you, I think yesterday, I said that never trust anybody. That was number 17. And that's because business isn't predicated upon trust. It's based upon performance. That's what the bottom line is. You know, I can perform. And when people come to school, they want to know answers, you know, to these legal questions. You know, what causes the income tax? When did I volunteer? Where is the law that requires me to file and pay income tax? I can answer those questions. I can tell you exactly where the law says you got to file and pay. I've heard this argument for years. You know, well, there's no place in Title 26 that tells you that you have to file and pay an income tax. Now, I have never read all of Title 26. I never jumped off the Empire State Building to find out if I'd fall down or up. I don't know if Title 26 says that there's an income tax to pay or not. I never read all of Title 26. But I can tell you where The U.S. Code says you got to pay it. I can show you where in the law you have to pay it, where you got to file it, where you got to do it. And so when I hear people make that statement, you know, I just kind of shake my head. Now, I'm not here to prove that these people are wrong. I don't have any duty to prove that this guy is right or that he's wrong. In short, I don't have any duty to save a fool out of his folly. Now, I don't have to read everything, but I can apply my own brain to this. I presume, and I've asked students in here oftentimes, and I've been doing this for 25 years, not one student has ever reported to me that he read all of Title 26. And I ask people that. I say, have you heard it said that there's no place in Title 26 that says you have to file or pay an income tax? And almost everybody will raise their hands and say, yes, I've heard that said. I said, now, how many of you have read all of Title 26 and can point to the page and the paragraph where it says that, or where it doesn't say that, or can testify that there's no place in Title 26 that says that because you read the whole thing? Nobody has ever raised their hands in 25 years, and that includes me, and I'm the teacher. I would venture a guess and say that there is probably no commissioner of the Internal Revenue Service, past, present, or future, who has ever read all of Title 26 or will ever read all of Title 26. And I got to ask the question, well, how in the hell do you know that there's no place in Title 26 that doesn't make that statement if you haven't read it all? So I got to be the first one to say, I don't know. I haven't got a clue as to whether Title 26 says or does not say you have to file and pay an income tax. But I know that there is a combination of court decisions and statutes in Title 26 and statutes in Title 42 that tell you you have to file and pay if you have income, have a Social Security number, and if you're a taxpayer. All right. Now, with that out of the way, I just thought I'd digress a little bit and show you that a lot of times people make statements that they can't prove. They really do not know that to be a fact. It's true they probably believe it. I don't doubt but what people believe, that if you're real good, you're going to go to heaven. Or that if you're real bad, you're going to go to hell. But you didn't get that out of the Bible. Now, you might have gotten that out of the Koran. You might get that out of the Book of Mormon. You might get that out of some book that was written by Jerry Falwell or Billy Graham or somebody else, but you didn't get that out of the Bible. You may believe that you got it out of the Bible, but you didn't. So people believe a lot of things that they cannot prove, and they believe a lot of things that are not true. Now, let's go on to another one, number 39. Good business is based on performance, not trust. Performance. It's what you perform in business that counts. And Walmart performs, and Kmart does not perform. Now, that's just my observation. A lot of customers that go to Kmart. But there's less customers going to Kmart than to Walmart. Now, number 40, we come to all wealth comes out of the ground. So where does all this wealth that is transferred from person to person through business transactions come from? Then it comes out of the ground, and it requires people to work on that. You got to work on this thing called property, this thing called raw materials. And you work on it. You know, you dig iron ore out of the ground and you ship it off to the steel mill and you turn it into steel and you send the steel to the auto factory and the auto factory turns it into an automobile. That wealth represented in your new Ford Taurus is, in reality, the labor and the materials that came out of the ground. Number 41, working for wages is the antithesis of business. Working for wages is the opposite of business. Communism is predicated upon everybody working. The proletariat. Everybody's going to have a job. Hell, I'm not looking for a job. I don't want a job. I am running as fast as I can away from employment. I avoid employment like I avoid AIDS, herpes, and VD. Now, that doesn't mean that I don't labor, that I don't work. But working for wages, going into the coal mine with my lunch bucket, I was married to my first wife. God bless her, she's a wonderful lady. And I never had any real complaints about her. She had some complaints about me, and probably they were well taken. But she said, why don't you go out and get a real job? Why don't you go out and get a real job? You know, I'm what we call self-employed. Now, I'm actually not self-employed. I'm a trader at law on a cash basis. But, you know, nominally, you know, if you saw me, you'd say, well, that guy Gordon, he's a self-employed businessman. And that's the opposite of working for wages and having a real job. People, you know, that have real jobs are FBI agents. You know, they go to college and they get a degree and then they go off to FBI school and they get a paycheck. You know, every Friday they get a regular paycheck. They know how much money they're going to make every week. I haven't got a clue as to how much money I'm going to make this week. Not a clue. I couldn't tell you if my life depended on it. Some weeks I don't get paid a dime. Some weeks I get paid some. Some weeks I get paid a lot. I never know. I've gone 2, 3, 4 months and never had a payday. Never affected me much because, you know, I can live for 2, 3, 4 months or 2, 3, or 4 years without a payday. Most people live from payday to payday, and if they don't have payday next Friday, the rent doesn't get paid. If they don't have payday the following Friday, then the car payment doesn't get paid. If they don't have payday, you know, the next Friday, then they don't eat. And my car payments, my house payments, my food budget doesn't have anything to do with payday. Nothing. Not even remotely. Nothing to do with payday. So a businessman is a different kind of animal than a working man. And there's no money in employment. So if you think you're going to make money working in the coal mine, I think you're going to be sadly disappointed by about the time you get to be 50 years old. I think you're going to be disappointed. The money's in business. And if you want to know where all the real money is located, it's in private business. Now, I happen to take a look at the Wall Street Report, you know, the Dow Jones Industrial Average. And I took a look at some big corporations, you know, like General Motors. And I looked at what they were earning, what their profit margin was, Walmart and Bill Gates and those. Listen, Bill Gates is the most profitable guy, well, in the report that I saw, the most profitable guy in the blue chips, 24% profit. Followed by Walmart at about 23, I believe it was, or something like that. Maybe Bill Gates was getting 26. And then General Electric was right up there. And there was a couple others. But it's about 25%. Okay. Mark this down. Sharpen your pencil now on both ends if you haven't done it already. So that you got lead in your pencil here. A businessman does not do business for less than 100% markup. You following me now? To put it another way, I wouldn't get out of bed for a 25% profit. If you came to me and said, hey, I got this real neat business deal over here and you can make 25%. You can invest $10,000, Mr. Gordon, and you can make $2,500. I'd look at you like you were suffering from the terminal stupids. I wouldn't get out of bed. I wouldn't risk $10,000 to make $2,500. I might risk $10,000 to make $10,000. Now, that's a pretty straightforward, normal business deal. I might risk $5,000 to make $5,000. I might risk $500 to make $500, but I wouldn't risk $500 to make $100. Or risk $500 or invest $500 to make $200. That's not business. So when I see these big corporations and I see all of these pundits, all these people go to college and get letters after their names, and they get business licenses and they go out and rape, rob, and pillage the people like Ken Lay at Enron. And then I take a look at a business principle that says, thou shalt not steal. Enron was just like Studebaker. It was a criminal enterprise. Then it went its course, and it finally terminated. Crashed and burned. And all of these enterprises are on the verge of crashing and burning, including the United States government. The fact that they've been here for 100 years or 200 years doesn't prove anything. Now, there is a governmental system that's going to last forever. And that governmental system is based on business principles that come out of the Scripture. God Almighty gave us certain business principles. Some of these business principles come right out of the Bible. Now, working for wages is the antithesis of business, number 41. Don't forget that. Number 42, never go surety and you'll never pay another man's debt. Did you know that in the Bible, there are six statutes, six places where God Himself tells you never sign, never co-sign, never go surety for anybody else, for any reason or any cause or any purpose. My old daddy was—he wasn't a Bible scholar by any stretch of the imagination. My old daddy wasn't, but my dad—I came to him one day. I said, "Gee, Dad, I'm 16. I'd like to get a driver's license." And then he said, what do you need a driver's license for? I said, so I can drive. And he said, well, what are you going to drive? And I said, well, I guess if I had a driver's license, I could drive your car. And he said, like hell. Like hell? You're going to drive my car. He said, you don't need a license until you've got a car to drive. And I said, well, Oh, okay. Well, I guess I need to get a car. He said, have you got any money? I said, well, yeah, I guess I've got a little money. And he said, well, good. Let's go out and buy you a car. And when you can buy a car and buy insurance for the car, then it's time to get a license so you can drive the car. No, my old dad wasn't no dummy. He wasn't gonna let me get a driver's license and then run out and drive his car and wreck it like all 16-year-old pimply-faced punks do. That wasn't in his way of thinking to be an intelligent program. And so I had to go buy my own car, and then I got my own insurance, and then I was responsible for my own damages, or at least I hired somebody else to be responsible, and then I could drive a car. My dad didn't go surety for me. I don't know who taught him about surety. But I see people all the time, you know, they're signing on the dotted line, you know, and they promise, you know, if this guy doesn't pay, then I promise to pay. I'm not going to promise to pay your bills. Hell, I'm having problems enough paying my own bills without paying yours. So always remember, never go surety and you'll never pay another man's debt. Number 43, a good product sells itself over and over again. You know, if the product that you're selling is a good product, it'll sell itself. You sell that to one customer and he'll go out and tell another guy who will tell another guy who will tell another guy. And that product will just sell itself over and over again. Number 44, a lazy businessman is a poor businessman. Businessmen aren't lazy. And if you find one that's lazy, you're going to find one who's headed for failure. The businessman is the guy that doesn't go home at 5 o'clock. He's the guy that stays there till 6, 7, or 8 until all of the work is finally completed. The employees are there to help the boss. And then they go home at 5 o'clock and the boss stays right there and continues on. The businessman stays right there and finishes the job, finishes the work that the working people don't or won't finish. Number 45, you know, incentive and productivity go together. A businessman has incentive because he sees profits on the horizon. Same thing is true with working people. They have to see profit on the horizon. I have always put incentives in front of my employees to motivate them to success. People have to be motivated. You know, if a guy is just getting whipped, and compelled by threat to drag a big block of rock from here to there. He'll drag the big block of rock from here to there. But that's all he'll do. He won't display any incentive to stack that block on top of the other blocks, or to make sure that when he stacks the block on the other blocks that it's square, or that it's got the right mortar between the joints. He's not going to do any of that. He just does what he's told. That's why government employees are just great employees. They just do what they're told, like automatons. They don't think for themselves. They don't have any incentives. They show up at work every day, put in their time, and they go home at 5 o'clock. Those aren't businessmen. Those are employees. They don't have incentive. And that's why incentive and productivity go together. You can't have productivity without incentive. Number 46, when you're looking for a product to sell, look for a product that's very small and very valuable. I look at big truckloads of wheat and corn, 80,000 pounds rolling down the highway, worth $2,000 or $3,000. And then I go into a jewelry store and I look at a little box. And here's this little box that you gotta be real, you gotta put the ring in a big box, which is really just a little box that'll fit in your coat. Because that ring is so tiny. And that ring is worth $26,000. And I say to myself, oh my God, that ring is worth more than maybe 5 or 6 or 7 big, huge, semi-truckloads of wheat. Leave the wheat to the farmers. They like hauling great big truckloads up and down the highways. And when you're looking for a product to sell, select one that's small and very valuable. In business, doing the impossible is routine. I don't know how many times I've had employees tell me, why, we can't do that. Why we just can't do that. Why, that's impossible. Why that just can't be done. Businessmen do what is impossible to ordinary people routinely, every day. And we do it because it has to be done. That's the bottom line. It has to be done, so we do it. Impossible is a word that goes with employees and government workers. And that's why not much gets done by employees. Not much gets done by government workers. That's why government does half as much and charges twice as much for it. There isn't anything that government does that couldn't be done privately for half as much money. And twice as fast. So there are some things that we just insist the government do half as well for twice as much. And a lot of businesses do the same thing. They produce half as much. Then they produce it for twice as much. Hey, I'm about out of time. I'm going to have to break it off right there and remind you that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. We're talking about 101 business principles. Remember that The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. If you'd like to order one, then call the law school at 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. We got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody. And good night, friends.